Hi, I'm Deborah from Athens. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA.
Wednesday, March 24th, tune in WGXC Creative Community Radio to hear all sorts of different local voices, including Dawn Brownson, the Claremont Town Historian, talks to Rob Gellis about some historic events in Claremont. That's at 7 a.m. on the All Together Now show on WGXC. At 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show, Cheryl Kay is live in Hudson, and we'll speak with jazz saxophonist and composer Dan Blake and drummer Jeff Williams about their new release, Da Fe, on Sunnyside Records. Maria Manhattan is in with the Hudson Cafe at 11 a.m. And then Spike Priggen is live from Main Street in Catskill from his Spike's Record Rack with the Bedazzled Radio Hour for 2 hours after the local news at noon. At 10 p.m., Claire Pohl is live in Hudson with the Mystery Machine with Cosmic Disco Funk and more on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Support comes from support for
United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR
in cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United
by
Airlines, Mother
Books and Music,
Jutus Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
public
radio.com.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising. National Public Radio.
National
Business Radio
comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books and Music,
Jutus Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public Radio.
Nonstop Business.
Underwriting today is provided by Ink to Me. That's Ink to Me Scaling.
National Public Radio.
And inktomi.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public Radio. National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio. Should be tips.
Public Radio.com.
Soil Amendments and Mulches.com.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business Radio.
Public Radio. Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
NationalBusinessRadio.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable. Handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
You're listening to Wave Pharmacy on WGXC 90.7 FM, Hudson, ACRA, Catskill. This is our first episode, so I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Jen Cutler. I'm accompanied here by Tim Light. And our first guest for Wave Pharmacy is Elijah Weber-Hahn. I almost called you Weber, because it's clearly...
Well, you know, maybe I'll start doing that again. When I first started going back to Cornell, I went through a period where I was insisting that people pronounced it Weber-Hahn, which is the German pronunciation, but I kept forgetting, so that I was the one that sabotaged that plan.
All right. Well, I feel less bad about it. Just a short introduction to Wave Pharmacy, since it's our first show. We are presenting a talk radio show where we take engineering and design and technical professionals and attempt to use their expertise to solve emotional problems, mental health problems, relationship problems. We also, from time to time, we're going to flip it on its side and take mental health professionals and relationship professionals and have them solve engineering problems.
Clifford Nass would appreciate that.
Who is Clifford Nass?
Well, Clifford Nass developed the paradigm of computers as social actors. He and Byron Reeves, I think it's right, I don't know, my brain's kind of fried. But anyway, he wrote this book called The Media Equation. And what they found in their research is that people will treat fictional characters, computers, and robots the same way they treat people. And of course, there's bounds on this, and there's been research that has built on this and new findings, etc. But some of the central ideas were the computers as social actors paradigm and the robots as social actors paradigm.
Wow, interesting stuff.
I have my moments.
So just a shout out to listeners on WGXC or anyone listening on wavefarm.org. We are accepting, if you would like to write in any kind of issues that you're struggling with that you'd like us to discuss on air with engineering solutions, you can write to us at wavepharmacy@gmail.com. That's wavepharmacy@gmail.com. So why don't we get started? And Elijah, do you want to talk a little bit about your work and what you do?
Well, I try to do as little as possible these days, Jen. I mean, the nice thing about working at home is you can tell people that you're doing a lot of things where you're really not doing very much. But what I get paid to do is I manage a research lab at Cornell. It's the Collaborative and Communications. Oh my goodness. Wow, I guess I should have had coffee before. It's Communication and Collaborative Technologies Lab. And this is Dr. Susan Fussell's lab. And what we do is primarily we look at how people interact with technology. Specifically, we look at human-computer interaction, human-robot interaction, computer-mediated communication. There's a very strong multicultural influence to the research that we do in the lab. And we do some design research too, but most of the design research that we do is focused on the recommendation side. We do have some graduate students that will build things, though it's typically software. That's not always the case. A couple years ago, I was informed in an email that I'm an expert on telepresence, which was really cool to find out. So I'm an expert on telepresence robots, apparently.
Wow. That's a big moment for you then at this time in history.
I mean, it was kind of, it didn't really pan out, but you know, that I can still cite this email.
Yes. There you go.
No, I mean, I am very knowledgeable on mobile robotic telepresence.
So when you talk about mobile robotic telepresence, are you talking about like a robot with a screen in it that has a person's face on the screen? What are we talking about?
Yeah, that's the kind that I hate. But yeah, that's it. I mean, it can present itself in a lot of different ways. I mean, what we're actually engaged in right now is a form of telepresence, though it's not mobile and robotic.
I see.
I'm going to get this guy's name wrong, too. This is what happens when you don't think about these things very often. Tim will know. Is it Marvin or Martin Minsky?
His name escapes me also.
Tim does not know. M. Minsky is the person that coined telepresence. He's kind of a big deal. Some people call him the father of AI, etc. And the students that I work with, I have them read the article he wrote in Omni about telepresence, where he envisions this world that people can control a device and maybe the device will walk on the moon, or they can go to the depths of the sea, and they'll just have this profound sense of being in these places that they're remotely accessed. What's happened subsequent to this, it's been divided into kind of two disciplines. There's telepresence and there's teleoperation. And what Minsky was talking about a bit more is teleoperation. Telepresence, we're just very focused on the sense of being there, both for the person operating the device and the individual interacting with the device. Like I frequently conceptualize telepresence as a two-user system. What I see a lot of people doing is they'll become overly preoccupied with one half of the system. But to have rich social interactions, we want both groups to have a strong sense of the teleoperator being there.
Wow. So it seems like a lot of your work is really focused on relationships that are facilitated through technological means.
I mean, you could say that.
All right.
What we did one summer is we took the robots out and we tried to see what we could do with them. And it is kind of like you said, it's the original telepresence robots, they started out as a person had a laptop with a webcam and it was on basically a bar stool with wheels. And conceptually they've not advanced from that very much because it's like a screen on wheels. There are exceptions to this, of course, but this is the prevailing design modality in telepresence. And so we take these robots out and we'd see how far we could get Wi-Fi outside of buildings because they need Wi-Fi. And oh my God, the most insignificant terrain features will really mess these robots up. We actually took them down to the commons in Ithaca once and we took them into, we wanted to see if somebody could take one of these robots to the movie theater because we're trying to figure out different use case scenarios for this technology. No, you can't. There's a few reasons why. Bringing the robot into the movie theater is considered a copyright violation because it's considered to be a camera. But independent of that, it doesn't matter. The way the camera is set up, you can't see the screen. So I guess you could have a fun time hanging out with people with this robot, not enjoying candy or popcorn or any concessions, and not watching the movie because you'd have to hang out in the lobby. And that's assuming that there are no steps at this movie theater because they don't go up steps at all.
Yeah. Well, it immediately brings to mind the BAMBOT.
I'm not familiar with BAMBOT.
BAMBOT was this crazy four-legged robot that they designed specifically for the purpose of navigating complex terrain, you know. It's not just like kind of a chair on wheels. And in the beginning, they were kind of hilarious. There are all these videos of people poking them with sticks and pushing them.
Yeah.
And now they're like, you know, incredible. A couple of months ago, they put out a video where they had all different robots dancing. Did you guys see that?
I did see that. Yeah, this looks like some of the stuff Boston Dynamics is involved BAMBOT looks a bit like Big Dog.
It's actually Boston Dynamics. Stanford Robotics is not. Or maybe they collaborate. I'm not really sure.
Well, I mean, at a certain level, some of these places are all the same.
Oh, fair enough. All right, so are we ready to start diving into some of these more emotional?
Yes. Tell me the problems. Right. I have solutions.
All right, here we go. So here's the first. Here's the first one we found.
All right.
My husband's not too big a fan of makeup. I rarely wear makeup, and when I do, it's light, on the more natural side. My average look is mascara, eyeliner, eyebrows, and I might wear chapstick. On occasion, I do a full face.
Oh, this is really easy. I have the answer to this.
Okay, well, stand by, because
I got excited.
The only time my husband will compliment me is when I do a full face of makeup, but he won't compliment me until we're practically about to fall asleep. Like he forgot and just remembered. he does compliment my actions, like how I cook, or for trying more, notices personal growth, but he never notices physical changes. Surprise, surprise. My husband doesn't like full-face makeup. He doesn't like obnoxious makeup or lipstick. He doesn't like wingtips because it makes me look like a bleep. Last time I checked, I do my makeup how I like, not how you think it should be. I've tried to take his things into consideration. I had a baby a year ago. I've lost a chunk of weight, but kinda hit a plateau 20 pounds from where I was pre-baby. I already have, like, zero self-esteem, so it'd be nice if it seemed like my husband was attracted to me other than my bleep or bleep. I'm not taking any FCC chances here. I have vocalized many times the want slash need for compliments, even if I'm not a fan. I've vocalized the want slash need to recognize me physically, not just sexually. I've even tried asking, quote, how do you like this? But I always get the same two things. One, now you're just fishing for compliments and I don't do that. Bleep. Or two, well, I was going to say something, but you had to point it out, so now I'm not going to. And mind you, this is usually after hours. He's already had a chance, and sometimes I'll wait till the end of the day. If he still hasn't said anything, I'll try again, but I get responses, one or two. I'm starting to feel desperate. I shouldn't have to beg my husband to tell me I'm pretty. It takes 2 seconds to compliment someone. Please compliment your partners and recognize all positive changes mentally, emotionally, and physically. So that is our first conundrum.
My God, that's so depressing. I had like this really humorous answer, and I don't know. It's like my question is, how invested are you in the relationship? Because I think it's time to explore a different model. You know, I was gonna suggest doing more user testing with makeup combinations, but wow, I don't think you're the problem here. I think that it's time to interface with a different husband. Ouch, my condolences. No, you're right. It takes no time to compliment someone. If we were doing a user study with this, we would try a different design model. New prototype.
I mean, when you say design model, what exactly do you mean? Because when I'm looking at this, it seems like there's a communication error.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. It seems like it's a bad interface. Maybe it's the wrong user group.
I don't know, man. They just had a baby together. Presumably.
This thing, I mean, yeah, but that having children together doesn't necessarily denote intimacy in a relationship. I can think of a number of people that have had a kid together that are not very happy. Yeah, that's really depressing. I feel kind of bad trying to be humorous in that situation.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a dead husk of a human being in this February pandemic time.
February is a brutal month.
But this kind of reminds me of this database issue. Tim and I were working on a project, which is still in progress, which required using an electronic device connected to Wi-Fi to send sensor data into a database. It just seems like the sensor data being sent does not line up with the configuration of the database's columns. It's also like, which side is the side that needs to be updated, you know? Like, if there's a problem with the microcontroller that's sending the data, and it's not sending the precise values, or it's you know, not delineating the values properly, then there's no amount of reconfiguring the server that will solve the problem. You know, I mean, this woman's husband isn't presumably writing that he's having issues here. I'm not saying...
I mean, we don't know. Maybe he's writing into a different show.
That, well, of course, yeah. Our adversaries.
Yeah.
But of the data that we have been presented with, I can't help but wonder, you know, if we break this down into a whole set of issues, right? The biggest issue, not necessarily the first one that needs to be solved, but at its core, I think the biggest issue is that she doesn't feel good about herself, right?
Well, there definitely seems like there's self-esteem issues in both parties. I mean, it definitely seems like she had self-esteem issues, and from the picture, from what the self-reporting has told us about him, he kind of impresses me as someone who doesn't generally have a what we would call a healthy self-image.
Well, how do you figure that?
It sounds so miserable. I mean, she doesn't have anything positive to say about him.
Well, I think she said that he does compliment her on growth, and when she tries, you know, when she puts in the extra work, and that it's,
but she usually has to prompt that, I thought.
No, I just think the only thing she's been prompting were compliments to her physical appearance. That's how I understood it.
Oh, okay. I mean,
it's trying to solve a hardware problem with a software solution, right? Is how I interpret it, right? Because if she's concerned that he doesn't find her attractive, and she's presuming that attraction occurs only in a physical way, that's a pretty large presumption, right? So she's only got really one method that she's dealing with in terms of trying to solve this problem, which is not necessarily or even likely actually having to do with physical appearance.
I mean, yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, the way I interpreted this is it sounds like we might have two incompatible pieces of hardware, and it's not that they're necessarily bad pieces of hardware, but they don't work very well together. So we might want to put this hardware in different configurations and see what happens.
I believe the technical term is middleware.
I like that. I've not heard that before.
Yeah, it's the software you use in between the other pieces of software. There's a good example of middleware. Tim, I'm remembering a piece of software. The name escapes me, which was meant to... It took data from a Duquesne nurse call system, and it would translate those messages into something that nurses could wear, like a pager-type device. Do you remember the name of
that? I think I've heard about this, too. This sounds familiar.
Thinking about Emergen?
Yeah, there we go. Woo! Emergen. So middleware is a real thing.
I didn't doubt you. I just not heard the term before. But I get what you're talking about.
I mean, I
wonder... Yeah, so maybe they should incorporate some spicy middleware and see what happens.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But I'm trying to consider what the emotional equivalent of middleware is, you know?
Therapy?
Well, I think that's when you would install some new administrative software.
I feel like therapy is the log file. It's like conveying your log file to a debugging service. maybe.
Or would therapy be like defragging?
Well, I guess it depends on the issue you're trying to address in therapy, if I had to guess.
I mean, it might be some kind of utility scan.
I'm not sure why, but this is really freaking me out. Like, like getting therapy to a utility scan.
Or is it a software update? Is that therapy?
I think these are all different points in
the therapeutic process.
Yeah, I do. But I think in terms of emotional middleware, this is a really... It's...
Well, maybe emotional middleware would be finding more shared activities. So maybe they could find things that they're interested in that they spend more time doing together.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, because that would open new channels for them to communicate, potentially. You know, but I'm also thinking about this difference, which I just can't shake, which is, you know, because for me, ideally, you know, you would just rewrite the code in one of the pieces so that the other piece can understand it and vice versa. And,
I mean, I'm a pluck and chuck technician, so if like one of the modules is not working, we just replace it. So I'm still kind of in favor of that idea.
We call those trunk slammers. Trunk slammers in our line of work.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like connecting back to the topic of polyamory, I think that connecting more users doesn't actually solve the interfacing problem between the first two nodes, you know?
I mean, it might not, but it may increase the overall activity of the nodes.
But if the activity is causing a problem, then I mean, then we're getting much closer to like a kernel panic kind of scenario, right?
Well, the current activity is causing a problem. New activity might not.
Well, yes, except that the more, without addressing the initial activity, there will always be processes which are slowing the system down, if not destroying it. If this was a project that I was engineering, I think that the first thing that I would do is take a look in the code or take a look at the hardware and see what's not communicating properly exactly. It's very much about precision in my mind. So if there's a problem in the hardware, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and it's causing the software not to run properly, and then all of a sudden you're getting these crazy variables coming out, or it's sending out sensor data that's going into some strange place in the database, then it doesn't really matter how many other pieces of software you interface with this, because the hardware still at its core is not working properly. Do you know what I mean?
I do, you know, and I was thinking about like what we would do if we were having these problems with one of our telepresence robots. We would reboot the robot, so maybe the husband can be rebooted in some way. I mean, often that improves the network connection, so it could improve the communication. Maybe therapy would be the reboot. I don't know. Well, I think sometimes people don't acknowledge that people change.
Yeah. So are you saying that you suspect that somebody in this relationship has changed and another person in this relationship has not acknowledged that? Is that what you're...
Well, I mean, I don't know. A question that does come into my mind, it's a question of maintenance and how much maintenance has been done on this relationship.
Yeah, that's
because relationships take work. You have to maintain them.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. And especially with a new baby in the mix, there's probably not a whole lot of time for that.
Well, and it does kind of sound like the parameters or expectations of the relationship may have changed as well. And there might not be protocols in place to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very fair point. That's a fair point. Well, I think it makes sense to wrap up on this particular question. Shall we move on to the next?
Yeah. Let's do it. I'm ready.
All right.
We need a new unit in this relationship, too.
In which relationship is that?
In this upcoming one I haven't heard about. I thought I would just jump ahead and offer the solution.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like you have to ask the answer, like Jeopardy?
Yeah, we're taking a Jeopardy approach right. to this.
All right. Okay, so here's one. I, a female of 22, set a boundary with a guy I've been dating for 8 months, and now he blocked/ghosted me. What do I do? I started dating this guy last year around the beginning of the summer. Progressively, we started spending more and more time together, and naturally, I wanted to know what was going on between us by spending time together. I mean, hanging out every day and spending the night with me all the time and going on dates and traveling together. When we finally had the conversation about what we are, he told me he didn't want a relationship with me because he didn't see us going anywhere. I really wanted a relationship with him. It was really hard for me to accept him not wanting to be monogamous with me. Because of all the mixed signals I was getting from him. He's told me on numerous occasions that he does not want to be with me, and he's even told me he has feelings for an old partner that he was briefly dating and beep, while he was also seeing me. I've been monogamously dating him for a while now, but I recently realized how bleeped up and one-sided our whole dynamic is. My thinking was, if we aren't going to be in a relationship, it should be okay for me to date other people, because he's been dating other people, and he's told me numerous times he doesn't want a relationship with me. I started talking to someone else, and he saw the text message on my phone, and he asked me about them. He told me he was upset by me talking to someone else, but he also said he has no right to be upset about the situation, which is true. I asked him if he wanted to talk about things, and he responded very coldly to me. I didn't know what to say, so I was taking some personal time to think about my response. I really value our friendship and didn't just want to lose him as my boyfriend and friend. I was on social media last night and I noticed that he blocked me on everything. His silence almost feels like a punishment because I'm starting to move on and realize my worth and how bad he treated me. I don't know if I should just let go of our relationship or if I should try and get closure. The blocking me because I needed time to think about my response feels a little immature and manipulative to me. I just don't know what to do. Update. He's already texting me, asking why I'm not responding to him, and he made it clear he wasn't interested in having a conversation about what's going on. Yes, I'm dumb for letting things go on as long as they have. I don't want a monogamous relationship with anyone. I just wanted the freedom to date other people like he has. I don't understand why I'm immediately rejected when I exert my own freedom and autonomy. If we're going to casually date, is it not fair for me to assume that I can casually date other people too?
I was right! Replace the unit! You could do... I mean, that's... I don't know if I can make that into a joke. We've got so much in there. We've got... There's emotional withholding. You've got gaslighting. There's manipulation. I think that she was correct when she said that there was a maturity issue at play. So, yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, this is definitely more than a communication issue. You have a total network failure at one point. So it definitely seems like you have got hardware that just is not compatible. One of the devices sounds like it's been corrupted.
Yeah, I'm trying to search my mind for a real world engineering concept to liken this to.
Yeah. I mean, there's like a ransomware aspect to it.
Yeah. I'm trying to find like a computing equivalent to attachment and being emotionally invested.
She said she's 22. Is that right?
That's correct.
This is a lot to be going through in terms of a relationship when you're 22. You should reserve this type of abuse for your 40s.
Well, we'll save that as a reserved word then, shall we?
I mean, you could also reserve it for your next life, but I mean, it's not really, it's an experience one could do without. Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean,
oh my God, is it being reliant on open source software during a system update? Oh God, is that the analogy? I love open source software, but
does open source software love you?
Well, fundamentally, I think it I don't know if it loves me, but it certainly respects me in its way.
I don't know. It sounds like there's a lack of respect in this scenario.
But again, I'm thinking about it from the from the perspective of the user.
Yeah.
And the user has invested in this system, you know, trying to update their situation. Situation is updating, but this piece of software is like not. It's just not compatible.
I mean, we might if this were a study we were doing, we might abandon research in this direction and try an entirely different approach.
See, it's funny you say that, because the thing that I can't stop thinking about is Apple operating system updates. That's what this feels like to me.
They're terrible. Like,
but that's what I mean, is like, you're forced to update to use some stuff, and then like the other half of the stuff doesn't work. Meanwhile, yes, the operating system is losing its marble.
And you get no warning on it either. Like, you could literally just start up your device one day and it doesn't do what it could do the day before.
Well, I think that's determined by whether or not you have automatic updates set in your preferences. But
I mean, to a degree, but sometimes that will happen with the apps that you have as well.
Well, you're talking about iOS, right? Because you're an iOS user?
Well, I mean, I've experienced this on Windows also. So it's not specifically a mobile computing issue, but then you'll get, they'll contact you like, please evaluate your experience. It's like, you really don't want me to do that right now, because it's not been good.
I mean, there was a lot of
no, I get it as a pop-up. Like, rate us X stars, and it's like, we don't offer a negative option, so no. And that's generally following a lot of bleeping.
Yeah. See, I refrain from using colorful language. What I usually do is just send like 300 crash reports. Like a crash report DDoS attack, you know.
It typically throws me into a semi-psychotic state, so...
Well, you know, I mean, these things are crazy making.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's infuriating. And
I mean, could you imagine if cars were designed the way computers are, with that type of functionality?
I'm not sure what you mean. The front end of my car.
Well, it's just the fact that it's just the fact that the capabilities change so frequently with the updates.
Oh, superchargers for updates.
And the fact that you can have a very different machine from one day to the other, depending on how the software is set up.
Yeah, that's alarming. I mean, but
no,
the hardware is the hardware. You know, but you're right. Like, what if you updated your operating system and all of a sudden your wheels don't spin anymore? You're like, well, you know,
exactly. I updated OBS and it caused problems with my webcam to the point that every time I tried to access the webcam, the computer would crash.
Oh, I had that issue. I just was running a Hackintosh and assumed that it was my own ignorance. This is a mistake.
No, it was crap code.
That's, you know, what's really interesting about that particular problem is that after that, I couldn't get any kind of video capture source to work at all. Like, it corrupted something having to do with the actual...
I had to downgrade, because I had the same issue.
Oh, I tried to downgrade and it didn't help.
I had to downgrade and do a system restore. It really, it was about 9 hours of work.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I guess this is kind of like what's going on in this scenario, and then it leaves you wondering, like, where do we stand now? Well, where I stood is I wasn't going to update anymore. So don't update this relationship.
You know what's interesting about that, though, is that, that's kind of a trauma response, don't you think? Is like, well, I had this bad experience updating this software that I use frequently, and it's totally screwed up my machine, so now I'm just never going to update again, which is, I'm learning about myself in this moment, because my ethos, like my mantra as a person, is don't ever update unless you have to. Just don't do it. In fact, when I had to update my machine now, I ended up just getting another hard drive and doing a fresh install of a newer operating system. Because I just I could not take that risk, and so, you know. But sometimes you could just update and everything's fine. So I
well, that's true.
But I wonder if it's about choosing better developers and better software to put your faith into. You know, like tried and true developers.
I think that's very applicable to this situation because I think that there's definitely better developers that can be called upon than the one that's currently being used in this situation.
Well, I'm sure it's a whole team. I'm sure, I mean, OBS is open source, so you can see exactly who's
contributing. No, I'm talking about the relationship.
Oh.
I mean, I don't think this is salvageable. It sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and the caller or the submitter, whatever we want to call her, seems to be aware of that they are just in very different places right now. Maturity seems to be a factor, etc. I think it's, I mean, it'd be nice if we could be friends, but that may not even be in the cards.
No, I mean, how can you befriend software that's not being maintained, especially if it's open source?
How can you be friends with software that crashes on you without any warning and then pops back up and asks for you to give a user experience report?
Yeah, and at the end of the user experience report, it asks for your social security number and tells you you've won $10,000 from a Nigerian prince.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you can't. You have to uninstall.
Yeah.
You very much have to uninstall.
And then find the strength in your heart to be able to trust another software developer in the future that, should you need to update, it will be reverse compatible.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's about that situation. It's not about you as a software user.
Well, Tim works for a software development company. How do you guys handle, you know, breaks or updates that cause breaks in the actual usage of the product?
Point fingers at each other.
Well, it seems to be some of what happened in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure we should be taking a note from that playbook, but it does seem like a very common response. Is anybody ever pointing inward, Tim, or is it just always outward?
Sometimes that happens.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, I mean, magic of version control is you can just revert yourself back and try again.
Yeah.
Can you revert yourself forward or no?
I think that's called updating. No.
And now we're
back. Well, I don't know. Some of these updates feel like a reversion.
like what?
Well, okay. You know, I mean, I use iPads to make music with. This is a bit out of the scope of the show, so forgive me. with the latest update on iOS, the music making capabilities of the iPad has been totally downgraded for me. And that I suspect that this is connected to the new audio protocols that they've done with controlling volume in headphones. But apps that formerly would not use very much DSP use almost double or triple the amount that they did. So I'm just very limited in what I can do with an iPad. And that's, I also had to increase the buffer size significantly, which is not very desirable. Otherwise I get these audio distortions. It's really disappointing because the iPad is a very, it was a very versatile tool for music making. And it's not like I can downgrade because those versions of iOS are no longer supported. So I would have to get it back to a state when it worked for me, I'd have to jailbreak the device, and that's not very desirable.
This is almost sounds to me like planned obsolescence. I mean,
I'm certain it is, because it's Apple. Steve Jobs came up with planned obsolescence, I think.
Yeah. Which makes me think that you should jailbreak the thing. I mean, it's the right thing
to
do.
I don't know. I might want to resell it someday. So I'm concerned about it affecting the resale capability. I don't know. I mean, I just wanted to do what it used to be able to do. Which I guess is applicable to both of these romantic situations.
Yeah, I mean, planned obsolescence in technology is almost like self-sabotage. I mean, that seems really like, in a lot of ways, that's what he's done, you know? Is that there's like some kind of denial going on with him, like he wants what he can't have, or he wants, you know, I don't know.
It seems like what this guy was trying to do was take advantage of the free trial usage, and then when that expired he decided to not use the service, and then he called back into tech support asking why it didn't work after failing to commit.
Yeah, and even went as far as manipulating his registry files to try to fool the thing into giving him another 14 days.
Frankly. Yeah, he definitely attempted to gaslight.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate. Because it sounds like a nice piece of software.
Yeah. Which one's the software again?
Who cares?
All right.
I mean, that being said, please don't pursue this relationship anymore.
Yeah. I mean,
as qualified as I am to say that,
value your user experience. You know.
Yes, exactly. You need to come up with. In a relationship, you want to have a user-centered experience that is mutually beneficial. Because if one party makes it all about them at the detriment of the other party, the relationship will crash.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Elijah, for joining us on our first episode.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Of Pharmacy. Is there anything else you want to say? Anything you want to plug?
I don't know. I don't know what am I allowed to plug?
You can plug whatever you want.
I mean, in addition to, you know, managing the Collaborative Communications Technology Lab, we're at Cornell, we're over at Gates Hall. I also do a musical event series called The Electro Zone. We have a website, theelectrozone.org. It's fun. We do Twitch events, and that's at twitch.tv/the_electrozone. I like to think that our Instagram is delightful, and hopefully you will as well. And just look up The Electro Zone. I mean, that's kind of like the recurring theme here. And I also host a radio show on... I hopefully it's not a competitive station, but it's a different station. Jen was on the show. Maybe we'll have Tim on sometime too. That's being archived now. It's called Strange Oscillations, and it's being archived on SoundCloud. The fresh episodes are on WRFI out of Ithaca, and that's on Sundays at 5. Forever, until I get tired of doing it. And then I found out they'll replay the content afterwards, so maybe it will be forever.
Awesome.
Great. And reading, you know, I'll promote reading too. Read a book, it's great.
Excellent.
Yeah, do more reading.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. And
yeah, thank you.
We'll see you all next month. Take care.
Yeah.